And greetings in Jesus' name. It's good to be here with you. Appreciate those opening thoughts. Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for me. And it's just so true. Elijah probably just had experienced one of the greatest miracles that a man could experience, a mountaintop experience. And yet that's how we are in the flesh. We quickly become discouraged and need to rise and eat more. It's been good to be here with you so far. Thank you for your prayers. Didn't bring a songbook up here again. Let's sing a couple verses of this. Psalm 507. Let's sing first and third tonight. First and third. I am thine, O Lord, I have heard thy voice, and it told thy love to me. But I long to rise in the arms of faith and be closer drawn to thee. Draw me nearer, nearer, blessed Lord, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me nearer, 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 blessed Lord, to thy precious bleeding side. Oh, the pure delight of a single hour that before thy throne I spend, when I kneel in prayer and with thee, my God, I commune as friend with friend. Draw me nearer, 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 blessed Lord, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me nearer, 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 blessed Lord, to thy precious bleeding side.
Thank you.
Tonight, as I said last evening, I'd like to speak a little bit more on to the youth. Again, it's never exclusive to any group of people. That's a good thing about the Word of God. But I would like to speak a little bit more to you youth. And I'm thankful for youth, you youth, and youth in general. I just feel, especially as life goes on, that youth are such a blessing. And I hear comments, and I know that sometimes parents, and not so much in our circles, but maybe half jokingly, but half seriously, lamenting the difficulty of the relationship between maybe themselves and the stereotype youth. The youth that are struggling with their authority and that relationship from growing from childhood to adulthood, and some of the challenges that can come with that. And those are real, those are true, and some of you probably know what I have related, both personally on from a youth standpoint and from a parental standpoint. But it's also a very special time, youth is. It can be a real blessing. It's a time of inspiration to watch youth. In my experience, I guess I feel like youth have caused me less, turmoil and stress in my life than maybe older people have. I feel like their struggles are just more, they're to be expected. They're trying to find their way in life. They haven't been there yet, and they're trying to sort life out. And I think that is just fine, and that's normal. Youth can be and should be a good time of life. A little bit about youth. It's a time when youth are often at their peak physical strength. They're strong, they're fresh, they're energetic, full of vigor. Often, in the world's view, it's peak of physical beauty, and of course that's debatable. But in the eyes of the world, the youth and vitality and strength, it's a time when minds are fresh. They're often not cluttered with a lot of responsibilities in life. Youth are often curious, and they like to explore, and everything in life, or many things in life, are new, and they like to try things and explore and experiment. And a lot of that is very good. It's also a time when habits are formed, and character is formed, and patterns are set, both good and bad, where decisions are made that will shape your future life in some ways little, in some ways dramatically. Youth is a time when children leave the innocence of childhood behind and become accountable and responsible to God in that time. It's when physical passions come to life in youth. And that is good, and that is God made. That's nothing bad. It's just part of the process of growing up. So there's many attractive things about youth. You know, there's many adults and old people in the world that are wealthy that would pay a lot of money to retain their youth or to trade places with youth and to be able to buy years of time back. But with youth, with all the advantages that come with youth, there's also some disadvantages and some realities as well. Youth is a time of inexperience. That's not bad. Things are new, things are fresh, but very little of life has been lived yet. It's unknown. A sharp mind can generate a lot of good ideas and possibilities, but without the years of experience, there can be a lot of unguided, untried ambitions. Well-meaning ideas, but many times there's mistakes. Youth can be a time where older adults, like parents, look slow, look like they don't know what they're doing, look like they're doing life poorly. They don't know how to train children, and they're maybe boring. And so youth is a time of idealism, and that's not wrong. In fact, that's just the way it has to be, because life has not been lived yet. And so you are living, you have your ideas, how you want to live life, and that is good. But a wise young person will recognize some of these realities and tap into the experience around them. Ask for advice, and so on. We want to look at some of that. Until now, you youth, or not right now, but depending on what stage of life you're at, you have mostly been created or are what you are because of your parents. You haven't decided who you were born to, where you're going to live, what church you're going to be a part of. I mean, you do as life goes on, but up through childhood and into youth, your parents are guiding and shaping, and you're a lot the product of your parents, whether you like it or not. Sometimes it's a blessing, and maybe sometimes there's things that need to be undone because parents aren't perfect. But now, as youth happens, life shifts, And it's a process. It's not a switch that happens overnight, but it's a process to where you begin to make more and more of your own decisions and choices. And you start to shape and build your own life and your own character and what you're going to be. And I want to read you just a little story. I don't know if it's true or not, or if it's a parable. Some of you maybe heard it, and that's fine. It's called The Carpenter's House. An elderly carpenter was ready to retire. He told his employer contractor of his plans to leave the house building business and to live a more leisure life with his wife, enjoying his extended family. He would miss the paycheck, but he needed to retire. They could get by. The contractor was sorry to see his good worker go and asked if he could build just one more house as a personal favor. The carpenter said yes, but in time it was easy to see that his heart was not in his work. He resorted to shoddy workmanship and used inferior materials. It was an unfortunate way to end his career. When the carpenter finished his work and the builder came to inspect the house, the contractor handed the front door key to the carpenter. "This is your house," he said, "my gift to you." What a shock, what a shame. If he had only known he was building his own house, he would have done it all so differently. Now he had to live in the home he had built none too well. So it is with us. We build our lives in a distracted way, reacting rather than acting, willing to put up less than the best. At important points, we do not give the job our best effort. Then with a shock, we look at the situation we have created and find that we are now living in the house we have built. If we had realized that, we would have done it differently. Think of yourself as a carpenter. Think about your house. Each day you hammer a nail, place a board, or erect a wall. Build wisely. It is your only life you will ever build. Even if you live it for only one day more, the day deserves to be lived graciously and with dignity. The plaque on the wall says, "Life is a do-it-yourself project." Your life tomorrow will be the result of your attitudes and the choices you make today. I want you to keep that picture in your mind tonight, that you are building your life. You are building your house. And what you do today, you live with tomorrow and on down the road. I'm a builder, so this makes a lot of sense to me. But more importantly, Jesus used this word picture as well. Jesus was the son of a carpenter. I don't know what all he built. But in Luke 6, 47 to 48, he says this, "Whosoever will come to me and hear my sayings and doeth them, I will show you to whom he is like. He is like a man which buildeth a house and diggeth deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose and the streams beat vehemently upon the house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that buildeth a foundation built on a house upon the earth, which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of the house was great." You know, you youth, there's a lot of things and circumstances in life that you can't control and you won't be able to control. Floods will come, storms will beat vehemently upon you. But the one thing that you can control, and really only you can control, is the character that you're going to have and the house that you are going to build. Your parents' responsibility, it will continue on if you're a wise person to help and assist, but really the responsibility lays fully in your and our laps. And in a sense, we never get done building. That's not just a youth thing. It's us middle-aged and older ones are continuing to build and form our character as well. And sometimes we need to tear some things down. Sometimes there's things that are built up that aren't happy with, and we look back and we see the results and we need to kind of start over. And that is part of life. You know, to build a really good house is harder than building a poor house. It's a fact. It will take more effort. It will take more concentration. It will take carefulness. It'll take thoughtfulness. It'll take time. It'll take self-discipline. It will take sacrifices. It will take integrity. It'll take attention to detail. And it'll take counsel and input from other good builders in your life. What kind of a house do you want to build? You can build whatever you want to build, but you need to live in it. And that is the thought that I want you to think about tonight. And I want to encourage you in that. Ecclesiastes 11, I'll be looking in primarily out of Proverbs tonight, but in Ecclesiastes 11, 9, it says, "Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes." But then he says this, "But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment." Ecclesiastes 12, 13, and 14 says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment and every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil." So enjoy life. Live it to the fullest. Be creative. Explore. But always keep in the back of your mind, there's accountability for the way that we live life and for the choices that we make. Proverbs is a book of the Bible that is full of practical instruction and advice for all ages. But it seems especially to be written by Solomon through the inspiration of God, focused on youth, a lot of it. Solomon, as we think about his life, I've wondered about Solomon, what he was like as a youth. You know, we know the story about where he asked God for wisdom, and then he became such the wisest man that ever lived, and a rich king, and all the things. But I've wondered, what was Solomon like as a, I don't know what age he was when he was king, but pre-king years, at 18, 20. What was he like? Did he stand out? Was he wiser? Was he an A-plus student? I don't really know, of course, but I tend to think that he wasn't. I tend to think he was probably a very good, probably a smart man, but I wonder if he wasn't just more of an average man. But as we know the story, when he was given responsibility and God asked him, "What do you want?" And Solomon, I think, in genuine humility and just need and helplessness, cried out to God for wisdom to do the tasks that he had, and God blessed him for that. And I think that principle is still true today, that young people, middle-aged people, people, when we have that heart of humility and when we truly seek God, he will give us wisdom that we will miss out on otherwise if we don't do that. Proverbs is a lot about, if you were to boil down Proverbs, it's a lot about the theology of two ways, not three or four, but he talks about the way of wisdom, and he refers to it as a she a lot of the time, and the way of folly. The way of the wise, the way of the fool. And he hits a lot of different aspects in life. And so that's what I want to think about tonight, the two ways. It's really, you know, life is full of a lot of options, and we're faced with a lot of different choices. But if I were to draw a picture up here, and I won't here, I'm going to use it maybe a little bit, but a map of a road from birth up to heaven, and a road to hell. On these roads of life, there's just forks off of them all the way through through all the way up through life. There's just hundreds and hundreds and thousands of choices that we come to in life. And many times it's hard to tell. Some of the choices are maybe insignificant. Some of the choices are huge, life-changing. Some are small and insignificant. Some are small and very significant over the course of time. And so as you live life and you become an adult and a youth, you will face choices, choices and decisions, which way to go as you journey through life on your way to heaven. And many of these forks in the road detour to the broad way. It's the easiest way. It's downhill. It's a path of least resistance in the moment. The decisions of youth are very important. They're very impactful. One reason, sometimes we think maybe that we have time. Why can't we just live life, youth, fairly carefree? And when we get to a certain point in our life, and we're ready to get serious, and we're ready to settle down, then we'll deal with that next stage of life. And there's several faulty reasons for doing this. Number one, we're not as in control of our life as we think we are. And life is uncertain. We don't know if we'll make it to the next stage of life, for one thing. How much time we have. Another reason is that often when we choose a life of sin, it takes us places that we had no intention of ever going. We had no plan to go there when we made this decision into sin. Once you choose sin, you do not control the consequences or the destination often of where that leads. And the third reason is there's a law that God says is a law, like the law of gravity, and it is a law of sowing and reaping. What we sow, we reap. And sometimes we'll maybe think of life as a linear line. We have birth, and we live life, and we get to childhood, and we get to youth, and then you get married, middle age, and sunset years. But I'd like to, just a very simple picture here, like to have you think of it more this way. Life. As overlapping circles in life, as in your youth you are here, and in your midlife you are here, and in your older years you are here. And life is not just compartments where you live one and you go out and you shut the door behind you and you go into the next compartment and you live that life and then you go into the next one. What you do in this life very much affects in this stage of life, very much ties in with the next stage of life, and even into this stage of life. The sowing that we do in this one, we reap into here and even into here sometimes. It's not just disconnected. It's the law of sowing and reaping. And so that is my experience in life as a youth. Life carries on, and the things that I have done are both good and bad, impact the next stage of life that you're in. I'd like to look at a few things here in Proverbs, and I think we'll just start with reading in Proverbs chapter 1, the wisdom of God through Solomon, addressing the young man, the young woman, my son. And in the first seven chapters, I want to look at some of these my sons. I'm not sure how many there are. There might be about 10 times that Solomon says, my son. And then he gives some instruction. And I'm not going to look at all of them, but I want to look at some of them. I'll read 1 through 7, and then maybe read a few more as we go along. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the sinner and to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. I'll stop there for right now. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And this could be a whole sermon in itself. But I just want to say a few things here about this that I've thought of this lately and at Bible school, kind of talked about it some, but the foundation of a godly character and a godly life and the foundation to have wisdom is the more I think about it, the more I believe that the fear of God truly is the beginning of all of this. You know, there's a lack of the fear of God in our world and in our country. And, you know, the Bible says that perfect love casts out fear. And so what does that mean? Well, I think there's different kinds of fear. And I think the fear that he's talking about here is a reverence. It is a awe. It is a very high esteem and respect. And that you are a higher authority, and I respect you, and I will bow my heart to you. And in the age of grace and love and kindness and forgiveness, I think that there has been a lack of the fear of God, where people have just like can stomp around in the presence of God, so to speak, and there's no fear. God will forgive me. God will love me. And I don't think we should be going around in life like fearful in a scared sort of way, unless we're guilty. Then maybe we should. Maybe we should. And maybe that is part of this kind of fear of God as well. But a person, young people and older people, but young men and can often be tempted to come across macho and have it together, confident, strong, no fear. The bumper stickers, no fear. We've seen them. But that's a facade, and it's not a good premise to live life. That'll lead you into all kinds of problems. It's not true, and if it was true, it wouldn't be healthy for you. But to respect, Solomon was teaching here that. And I think Solomon had it, and I think he experienced it, and I think that's why he got wisdom, is that he just felt an unworthiness in his life. He didn't have a no-fear attitude. He had a need and a fear, and he cried out to God, and through that, God blessed him, and God continues to do that to the people that have a foundation for the fear and holiness of God. And if that is always your premise, and that is always a bit of your guiding principle in life, that will help you a lot as youth going through life. Verse 8 says, my son, here's I think the first, my son, hear the instruction of your father and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be ornaments of grace upon thy head and chains about thy neck. You know, as youth growing up, this can be a bit of a hard time. And I think we as parents play a role in this. And you need to be merciful with your parents, especially if you're the oldest child, because they're trying to figure it out as well. But it's a transition period of where the parent has been the authority and they're trying to guide the youth and they love you more than you know, and they just care and they want to see you it work out. But as you get older, the parents, if they're wise, will begin to let go and to let you even make some mistakes, small mistakes, and they are not involved in your day-to-day micromanaging your life. And so you, like I said, you need to make those choices. But the thing I want to remember is that you never outgrow the instruction and the honoring of your parents. You shouldn't outgrow that. I believe this, again, is a principle of God, a blessing of God, of respect and honor towards your parents and godly authority in your life. From the beginning of time, if you go back all the way to the Mosaic Law, for children to, they were to obey their parents. And in Deuteronomy, I won't read that, but I think it's in Deuteronomy 18 or so. There was specific a command from God that when there was a rebellious child that would not listen, would not heed, they were to take him out to the gate of the city and they were to stone him with stones so that others would fear and to put fear into the people in the congregation. And I'm sure that wasn't a light thing where a youth got rebellious one night and they took him out and stoned him, but more probably of a would not bow and would not bend and would not repent of his position. But it's more the point that God took it very serious. And then in the Ten Commandments, it was one of the Ten Commandments to honor thy father and mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God give thee. And then not only that, you go into Ephesians 6:1, and it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then it goes on to say, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long in the earth. And so although you mature out of obeying your parents, this thing of honor, and again, it ties in to a high esteem and a high respect and a high regard for the opinions of your parents and your authority. If you can do that, no matter how unreasonable and backwards your parents are being, if you can at least show them respect, show them honor, I think there's a place to sit down and talk and try to appeal and to maybe discuss what can be done. But if you can be respectful and honorable to your parents through that, God will bless you. And if you don't, you'll be missing a blessing. You are planting seeds in that stage when you do that, and you will about guaranteed to reap them later in life in some way, maybe with your own children, maybe in other ways. It has a way of coming back around. I think there's an honest struggle and adjustment that happens in this period. But one thing that is never okay is rebellion. And you know when you have it. You know there's just a heart of hardness and rebellion. And God hates rebellion and God hates pride. And God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And so I would just give you one thing. If you can just be honorable, be respectful to your parents and authority. It says that it may be well with thee. It's really about what's best for you. It's a principle that God has set up that will do you good, even though it feels painful in the moment to sometimes surrender or to show honor. A rebellious child is a heavy grief to their parents. And unless you're a parent, you probably won't quite grasp what that is, like all that a parent has poured into a child, how much they love them. And then to have that child rebelling and disrespecting, I think is a very serious thing that God does not bless. I didn't know if I should say this tonight. I don't want to embarrass anyone, but I was over at Brother George's house tonight, this afternoon, and he took me up on an airplane ride, and it was neat to see all that. But I was so blessed there with Larry. He just stood out to me how he was so respectful to his parents. And I don't think it was a show. It was just, he was just being respectful, and the respect was mutual. And so maybe that's a key for us parents, that as our children grow up, yes, they're still our children, but when they often will reflect a lot in us. And if we treat our children with respect and dignity, it often comes back, and we see that. So that was a blessing. Verse 10, another, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Again, youth is a time of full of energy and passions, to live life, to experience it to the fullest, to try things. And that's, I think that's wonderful. I think that's good. But there's something attractive. Sin is fun, some sin. Sin is pleasurable. And we just as well acknowledge that there is a certain level of fun and sin in the moment. But there's something that's almost as powerful as sin itself, and that is the sinner that is enticing us to sin. And pressure from other people, peer pressure. You know, as a youth, peer pressure can be a tremendous thing. And I know different personalities are made up different. Some youth seem to be swim upstream against the current, don't mind being different. But a lot of youth, whether they pretend to or not, it's a big deal. You're at a vulnerable stage in life. You want to fit in with people. You want to be accepted. You really do care what other people think. You don't like to be looked at as foolish. No one likes to be rejected and made fun of. But one of the big enemies we need to remember, one of the big enemies of the I talked about the fear of God. The enemy of that is the fear of man. And although that's in each one of us to some degree to be accepted, and we care what people think to some degree, always remember, especially a sinner, if a sinner entices you, consent thou not. Do not give into that. There are people and times, I think I would have been in that, where, you know, I didn't even really want to do the sin, but my friend, I liked him, and I liked to be with him, and I didn't want to separate that friendship. And maybe it was the other way around. Maybe I was the one leading the friend into sin. But whatever the case, friends will sometimes compromise and go along with things that they're not even comfortable doing and wouldn't even do on their own to please the sinner that is enticing them. Peer pressure. Because you don't want to break relationships if you don't have to. Proverbs 1:15 says, my son, walk not in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. And so sometimes you don't want to do this right away, and you don't want to come across wrong, but sometimes you have to come to the point where you have to cut off relationships for your own good. If people are bent on doing wrong, bent on doing evil, they're going to influence you wrong, they're going to take you down. And this can be hard, and I've experienced it. And again, I've been on both sides, but I don't want to paint myself as the good person. I've been the one that has drug other people down at times in my youth. But there came a point in my life when there was friends that I'd went to school with, friends I had grown up with, that I needed to part ways with. They were just going a direction that it was just hard. It was hard to be with them and always have that tension of things that I didn't think were right, weren't comfortable doing. And so sometimes you have to step back, and you have to analyze the situation. And, you know, maybe sometimes the manly thing is to do is just, instead of not saying anything and withdrawing, is to just go talk to your friend Maybe that'll wake them up. Maybe they'll respect you, actually, instead of reject you. Maybe deep down in they know that. Sometimes that's the way it works. Other times they'll scoff it. But what do you want to be? What kind of a house do you want to build? What kind of character do you want to have? Who our friends are and who we associate with and who we spend time with just is part of who we become and influence us. Humans are social beings, and so we spend time with people, and the time that we spend influences us. We are all vulnerable to this. So find good friends that will build you up. And I find it interesting, I think about it, in one of the qualifications of even a bishop, I don't know if it's in Titus or Timothy, but he says one of the things is to be a lover of good men. And I've thought about that. Even older men need to guard who they associate with and who they allow to influence them. Be a lover of good men. Proverbs 2:1, another one here says, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou shalt incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thy heart to understanding," and then it kind of goes on, if you criest out after her, and I won't read all that. But here is maybe overlapping and a little bit similar to what I talked about as far as honoring your parents, but here is, I think, in general, to be able to take advice and counsel, even when we don't fully understand or agree with it, maybe. Proverbs, there's many verses throughout where he talks about, and I'll read a couple more of them. But to have enough faith, even though you might not understand it, but if you have good men you understand, or good women or mothers, that you know they're good-hearted, you know that they're sincere and they're 100% people of integrity, and they're much older than you, even though you don't agree with them on some issues, don't take their counsel lightly. Trust their judgment at times, especially if it's a weighty decision. Be willing to listen. You know, submission wouldn't need to be a part of the Christian life if it just meant that we could just talk people through things to where they finally understood. Because then it wouldn't be submission. The job would just be to talk people into understanding. But submission is still part of the Christian life on through church life. And some people fight that. You know, a child at 1 and 2 years old, their will comes out and it does not want to be broken. And we just need to learn that in life, to submit. And that means when I don't agree, when I don't see it, when I don't understand it, I see it a different way. In that mindset, I submit. That is what submission is, to simply just bow my heart to another opinion. And we need to learn to do that somewhere in life. And a youth is a good time to exercise that. And the better you get at that in your youth, the more tools you'll have as you go through life. And that isn't meaning to be just a pushover. And I think good engagement and questions and trying to understand is in its place. Whosoever loveth instruction loveth knowledge, but he that hateth reproof is brutish. And a couple more verses in Proverbs. How long, ye simple ones, will you love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and the fools hate knowledge. Proverbs 12:15, the way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsels is wise. Proverbs 15:5, a fool despiseth his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. You know, I still struggle submitting, giving up my will. Now, if my wife can talk me through it, like I said, and then I can understand it, it's easier, but just to like really lay it down and take the counsel of someone else's opinion, you know, in the pride and flesh, that is very hard, but we need to humble ourselves and learn to submit. Okay, now jumping ahead to chapter 5 and 7. And I'm not going to read very much out of here. I want to read a few verses. And this is my son, and in my own words, he goes into a lengthy dialogue. But my son, a warning against immorality. My son, keep thyself pure. And I have mentioned this a little bit in previous sermon or two. But God has made us as human beings with physical and sexual desires. And this is good. This is not shameful. This is not dirty. This is, but it is given, God has given it with godly and good parameters in the bond of marriage. And outside the bond of that marriage, it is wrong. It is damaging. It is inappropriate. Proverbs 5, 1 through 5, and then 8 and 9, and then I want to read some in 7, just to kind of get the main gist of it here. My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. And verse 8 and 9. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh to the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. And we can see there that he's hinting, talking about the law of sowing and reaping. Give thy years unto the cruel. If we jump ahead to chapter 7, verse 7. And behold, among the simple ones, I discerned among the youth a young man void of understanding. And then he goes on and talks more. But for the sake of time, I'll jump back in at verse 21. And so it's a woman enticing the man. And I know he gives it always the woman is enticing the man, but sometimes the man entices the woman. That's not gender specific. Verse 21. With her much fair speech, she causeth him to yield. With a flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goeth unto her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, and as a fool to the correction of the stocks. Till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart incline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way of hell, going down to the chambers of death. So he paints this picture of the simple, the one that won't take advice, the one that is just like an ox willingly going to the slaughter, a 2,000-pound bull that just willingly walks right down the chute to his death and destruction. He physically could throw it off and run away and resist, but he of his own will and his own flesh walks right into death. And you know, youth, all sin has consequences. All sin is wrong, and there's reaping and sowing and reaping, but it seems like there is something that is especially damaging about sexual sins and impurity, that and I can't explain it all, but it just is the way that it is. Yes, it can be forgiven. Yes, you can repent and go on in life, but there is often scars. There is often a limp that a person walks with on into this. And even into this, that they will live with, depending on what they have done here in the area of purity. it's very important. It's very impactful, not only to your life, but when that goes on, it impacts others that might be involved in ways that are long-lasting as well. Your physical intimacy is meant to be a beautiful, godly part of the bond of marriage. So keep yourself pure. Keep yourself pure. One of the biggest gifts and investments that you can put into your marriage, if you get married, is to keep yourself pure. That will reap you and your spouse benefits. And if you rob it in this life, you'll pay for it often for a long time to come. Channel your energies and passions into a lot of other things, into learning, into growing, into serving. You are in a place right now that you can do things that I can't. And parents and married people that are tied down and in the middle of child raising simply can't. And take advantage of that. Exercise that. Learn to be a good servant. Someone once said, if you want to go into full-time ministry, get married. So if you learn to be a good servant, learn to minister, if and when you get married, you'll be a much better partner for your spouse. Selfishness is, it just doesn't work very good in marriage. I'll just say that. Remember, you are on one of two ways in life. You are taking the way of wisdom, or you're taking the way of the fool in all of these decisions that you take. God's laws and principles are not something on earth to make us miserable. That it's not even something that withholds us goodness now for a better tomorrow. God's parameters and principles are actually what make life right now the best, as well as in the future. And sometimes it feels like it's not that way. It's like God is withholding me, and if I could just be free and have fun, then I could enjoy it here. But God's set up life for us, and he likes us to be happy now. It's not just about enduring a lot of pain and agony so we can get to heaven or have a good life somewhere down the road. So keep that in mind and trust that, even though it doesn't feel like that. Just doing whatever you feel like doing, and always taking the fork in the road that is the path of least resistance is not going to take you the place that you want to go. Ecclesiastes, we read this verse. I'll close with this verse. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things, God will bring thee into judgment. So remember, the house that you are building today, you'll live in tomorrow. God bless you. I think that's all I have.